Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. This is also doubling as the Daily Roto Premium Fantasy Football Podcast, but you guys are all getting it free this week because, I don't know, I guess everyone at Sports Grid and at Daily Roto just either they think there's no edge on the Thanksgiving slate or they just want more people to win on the Thanksgiving slate. And I'll leave that up to you to decide, but my name is Davis Maddock. I am joined by Drew Dinkmeyer. We are going to run through the three-game Thanksgiving slate position by position. And Drew, how are you feeling about this Thanksgiving slate? How are you feeling about your choice to register for cash games on this slate?
I actually haven't registered just yet, but I intend to. I love Thanksgiving slate. I love a Christmas Day slate. I think these holiday slates, you get a lot more casual action in general. I think, you know, people want to avoid talking politics with Uncle Pete, and they want to make some DraftKings and FanDuel lineups instead. And so they mosey on over to their computers and tell people they're working on something to try to avoid it. So, yeah, and the reason that this podcast is available to all the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Pod listeners for free is because Daily Roto's got a free trial going on this week. So make sure to use the promo code STUFFING.
That will be in the link. If you're listening to this podcast on your podcast app and you just click on the description, the link to Daily Roto with the promo code will be right there.
Yeah, and you get a free 7-day trial. You can cancel it at any time within that period. It is auto-recurring, so if you do not cancel before the 7 days, you will be auto-billed. But it is a look at our elite package, which gets you access to everything. So NBA, NFL, NHL, I don't think there's a golf tournament this week. But anything that we have projections for, you have access to during this trial. So yeah, check us out, and this is a good opportunity to see what we're all about over at Daily Roto. So that's why the pod is free here. We'll have written notes and analysis alongside this podcast on Daily Roto in our premium section. And of course, the optimizer and the projections and all the goodies that go in with that, as well as lineup alerts day of. But I'm very much looking forward to this Thanksgiving slate. Although, I'll be honest, the games are not super appetizing this year.
Well, that's just what happens when they stick the Lions. Like, the fact that the Lions are always on this slate does just kind of ruin the activity.
But that had been fine for so many years because the Lions, you know, at least attempted to throw the ball, you know, with Matthew Stafford and Calvin Johnson. It was like, oh, you know, that's kind of fun. And, like, the Cowboys have gotten to be, like, a decent team. So that's not too bad in terms of the mainstays. It's just
gotten to be a decent team. Drew, they've had a winning record for 13 of the last 15 seasons. I don't need you to tell me that they've gotten to be a decent team.
They've had a winning record 13 of the last 15 seasons and won, like, one playoff game. That's incredible.
Go look it up.
That's incredible.
Well, they play in a tough division.
That's wild. Yeah, but, I mean, I think they're, like, actually kind of legitimately good this year, even though their record isn't that great. And then, you know, you've had all these like quarterback issues with Mitchell Trubisky totally falling apart for the Bears. Now Jeff Driscoll and Jeff Driscoll with a bad hammy for Detroit. Matt Ryan has totally fallen apart for Atlanta. It's just not as appetizing of a slate as I'm accustomed to for Thanksgiving Day, but we'll make do.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think that there are some big decision points that in tournaments are going to create a lot of leverage in ways that have not existed on these single day slates in the past. And, you know, it's very interesting because on one hand, I want to be mad at DraftKings for making the salaries this way. But on the other hand, I actually think that it kind of adds another element of game theory. So getting into it at the quarterback position, Drew Brees is our highest projected quarterback behind Dak Prescott, who is the fourth most expensive quarterback on DraftKings. So, I mean, I think there's the pricing has to be a reaction to the New England game, at least somewhat, I would guess, in their algorithm. But will Dak be so overwhelmingly popular that you were having unique lineups just by stacking other quarterbacks in the pool? Like, is Dak going to be that popular, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at the slate in general, you've got two teams and only two, Dallas and New Orleans, that have implied totals above 21.5 points on this slate. So naturally, those two offenses, I think, are going to get tons and tons and tons of ownership. How much it condenses will be interesting to see. We'll have the ownership projections from the guys at Unsourced Fantasy Collective up on Daily Roto. It sounds like on a Wednesday during the day from conversations with them, they'll have them up. But my guess is that Dak and Brees combined in terms of like large field MME tournaments are probably going to represent I would guess 60 to 75% of the total ownership of quarterback is my guess.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be, I think you're going to get really, really massive leverage on some of the other quarterbacks. The question is, can they deliver? If you're playing cash games on this slate, I think it's very clear that Dak is the choice.
Dak is the, yeah. And you will find some people though, especially at lower dollar levels, who are playing Drew Brees just because, like, Dak will not, he will not be as unanimous as our projection success suggest.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of opportunity there. I mean, especially on DraftKings, he's just too cheap. The fact that he's the fourth most expensive quarterback is pretty wild. But even on FanDuel, he's pretty affordable over there. I think between, you know, the high implied total, the fact that he runs a little bit, which Drew Brees does not, and the fact that the Cowboys have been a little bit pass happier in the red zone in general this year than in years past, I think, along with the price discount, all make Dak the clear-cut choice. If, you know, the interesting conversation for me is what to do with Drew Brees on this slate, because I think in tournaments, if you're playing, like,
His options are so chalky. Like, so Kamara and Thomas and Cook are going to be so chalky that you're not gaining any leverage by stacking him.
So, right. So, that's the thing. So, my instinct was, if you're playing three Saints, you probably should have Drew Brees in those lineups. But you probably shouldn't be playing three Saints and Drew Brees, because that probably will be owned a decent bit compared to some of the other combinations out there, because Michael Thomas should be the highest projected owned wide receiver. Jared Cook should be the highest projected owned tight end. And Alvin Kamara should be the highest or second highest, depending on him or Zeke, owned running back on the slate. So it's pretty hard to get away from Drew Brees stacks if you're building through optimizers and whatnot, because the skill position players are so strong, the optimizer is going to choose him as the quarterback often, right? So I think there's more leverage to be had in general by taking an underweight position on Drew Brees than there will be on Dak on this slate, even though I think Dak will be higher owned between the two.
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes sense. Like, I think you're getting access to way more unique combinations with Dak double stacks. Like, you're getting unique access to nut. Like, you'd have to quad stack Brees to start getting into unique lineup territories. Yeah. Like, you'd have to start adding in I think an interesting thing to do with the Daily Roto optimizer would be to not make rules for Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, and Jared Cook in terms of who they have to be attached to, but with Brees lineup, say Min One, Traquan Smith, and or Ted Ginn.
Yeah.
Because then you're getting into, okay, so if I have Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas in lineups, fine, that's whatever, but I'm also attaching Brees to, like, more unique players.
Yeah, I think that's one way you can do it. You could also just do a max 2 of 3 of Thomas, Cook, Kamara. And that way you would just never have all three together. And you could try to do something like that. But it's tricky. It's a slate where so much of the offensive value is tied up in two teams that this stuff is going to be a little bit tricky. I think the natural pivot that everybody's going to figure out is, like, hey, let's not play Dak. Let's not play Drew Brees. We're going to play Josh Allen, because Josh Allen is the guy who has the rushing upside. And I think that makes all the sense in the world. I just am interested to see where the projected ownership comes in relative to those two. I think Allen would be the guy that I would first go to, but I think the field will probably figure that out. And it wouldn't surprise me if ownership was something like, I don't know, Dak 35 to 40%, Drew Brees 20 to 30, 35%, and then Josh Allen like 15 to 25%. That wouldn't surprise me, and then leave the other three guys almost unknown. Would not surprise me. We'll see if it plays out that way. I do think Allen is interesting in the sense that he has the big rushing upside. He has the big play target to easily stack with John Brown. But he also has some cheaper options on the slate that are kind of secondary values at their position that I think are natural stack candidates, like Dawson Knox when we get to tight end, which tight end is just a wasteland for this particular three-game slate. Or, like, we'll see what they do at wide receiver, but Robert Foster pulled up with a hamstring last week. Duke Williams has not been active, so Isaiah McKenzie's been playing a lot more. And Isaiah McKenzie is a guy that's not going to be on anyone's radar, because nobody's ever thinking about, like, the Bills' number three wide receiver. But on a three-game slate where he's min-priced, you gotta at least consider. So we'll see if Duke Williams is active. But I think, like, there are some unique Josh Allen stack combos. And as we always talk about with Josh Allen, you can always play him naked because of the rushing upside. But on a three-game slate, I really don't think I'd do that. I really think if he's going to be in the winning lineup, he's probably going to have at least one receiver paired with him.
Yeah. So I really like Josh Allen. I think Ikea and Dak are going to be my two most owned guys, I think. And the way that I'm going to do Josh Allen, I'm not going to double stack him because so much of his touchdown equity comes in.
Yep.
So much of his touchdown equity comes in via rushing. But if your goal is, I just want to get first, right? I want to win solo first in these contests. I think an interesting thing to do is min one, John Brown, Cole Beasley, Dawson Knox, Isaiah McKenzie with him. But the guys who project to be a little bit chalky are like John Brown. You go, if John Brown, exactly one, Josh Allen. That way you're like, and I mean, maybe John Brown is not as popular as I'm expecting, but if John Brown is the third highest owned wide receiver, do you really want him in Drew Brees, Matt Ryan lineups?
That's a good question. So the only challenge is if you make a rule like that in an optimizer, you're just going to get boatloads of Josh Allen, because John Brown's a good enough value that he's going to be coming up frequently that you're going to get tons and tons of Josh Allen. I do think you can play Josh Allen single stacked. Double stacks are a little bit tougher, but viable. The reason double stacks are tougher for Josh Allen, not only the rushing equity that he has with touchdowns, but they just don't complete a lot of passes as a team. And generally, when you want a double stack, you want a lot of completion value.
Well, on DK for sure. On FanDuel, yeah. What is Cole Beasley on FanDuel? What's his salary?
$5,800.
Yeah, so like a double, actually, which is weird because on FanDuel you don't want to double stack as often, but I would say on this slate, actually, it's a little bit better.
The smaller the slate, the more viable it is, because if you find the one offense that concentrates most of the touchdowns on the slate, that's your path. So I definitely think that makes sense. The question for me is how you deal with these other three quarterbacks. Jeff Driscoll has shown, you know, big rushing utilization in terms of Detroit's offense, but he has a hamstring injury. We'll see what his status is kind of going into this game. I think that's a clear red flag for a player who is going to get most of their value from their legs. Then you've got Mitchell Trubisky and Matt Ryan, who've both been supreme disappointments. Trubisky, you know, I've talked about this on the Daily Roto Premium podcast, you know, seemingly for months, that he's a guy who won a bunch of people $1 million last year. And the skill position talent that he has is basically the same as what he's had last year. Now, this week, he'll be without, you know, they have no tight ends anymore. They're all hurt. And Taylor Gabriel's in the
concussion. Jesper Sessen.
Yeah, so the skill position players are a little bit watered down, but he's still really cheap. I personally think I would play Trubisky before Matt Ryan, assuming similar ownership. If I'm trying to be very contrarian on the slate.
Yeah, I mean, and if you wanted to point to something with him, you would say he had 7 rushing attempts and a rushing touchdown in this game against the Giants. He had 3 rushing attempts against Detroit. Like the rushing is at least going from non-zero, never happening, to like a little, like to something that is at least possible, right? Like you can factor that into the upside. So whatever.
Well, it's imperative to the upside. The thing that's happened, the thing that I would say with Trubisky that's intriguing is the fact that the Bears are actually moving the ball decently. They're just stalling out in the red zone repeatedly. And I think part of the reason that they're doing that is extremely conservative play calling in the red zone, because they have no confidence in Mitch, but also that they've kind of stripped away some of that rushing upside from him. And the fact that it's coming back a little bit, I think, is super important. Throw in the fact that the receiving options should be condensed because of the injuries, and you know where the ball's going. It's going to go to Allen Robinson. It's going to go to Anthony Miller. You've got Tariq Cohen and Javon Wims as other guys there, but I think you know where it's going to go. And so I think I like Mitch a little bit more than Ryan. Ryan has a little bit more late swap equity just because Ryan lineups, you'll have the full 2 games to kind of decide how you want to go. But I also think that late swap equity could lead to, if people are playing correctly, could lead to inflated ownership late, because teams that feel like they're drawing dead will move from Breeze to Ryan, or from Dak to Ryan, depending on how that Chicago-Detroit game goes. So I think Trubisky has
But not that many people actually do that, though. No, like the data overwhelmingly suggests that people don't swap even when they're dead.
They don't. So this is very contest dependent. If you're playing higher stakes stuff, this stuff will happen. If you're playing like lower stakes MME stuff, it won't happen. So you don't need to think about it. But I think in general, Mitch is the guy of the cheap guys that I'd be most likely to play. And since I'm like firing MME, I will certainly have some.
The people want you to tout Driscoll. I'm not interested in doing it, but the people want it.
I can't do it. I mean, I like I get there's really intriguing rushing upside in volume, but the fact that he has a hamstring issue is a big concern for me. And I think the Bears defense is, you know, still decent. I mean, they kept Daniel Jones in check last week in terms of rushing. Similar kind of situation there.
Daniel Jones, real threat.
No, but I mean,
no, he is. I'm just teasing you.
Yeah, it's they haven't really been beaten by, you know, rushing quarterbacks. So I don't think, and I think Driscoll is going to be similarly owned to Mitch. Is like, that's the other problem for me.
The thing is though, is that your Driscoll stacks are going to be mega more contrarian than like Anthony Miller could be.
Yeah.
One of the eight most owned players. Yeah. Will be one of the most. And yeah. Kenny Golladay, Marvin, like Kenny Golladay is legit a guy who could explode for 30 and it's just not going to be nearly as owned as you would expect him to be. Like, and Marvin, I mean, well, Golladay has the average depth of target over Marvin Jones. So, Marvin Jones has the rando 2-touchdown game equity.
So one other thing to note, if you are a 150 player in MME, these Thanksgiving slates, this is a little bit of a secret that I feel like I'm giving away here. But these Thanksgiving slates, because of the way that they're structured, just like Christmas Day slates, you should, if you're playing 150, you should have a little bit of everyone from the first game.
Yeah.
Because you can keep upgrading lineups as you go during the course of the day. So now I'm not saying every lineup should have someone from the first game, but you should not run a set that has stone zero of Marvin Jones, Kenny Golladay, Danny Amendola. Like you should have some pieces in case one of those guys goes off. You can now swap and restructure that lineup in a chalky way and kind of do that throughout the day. And I think, you know, Christmas Day NBA and Thanksgiving Day football and playoffs football are the times that you can do that. And you can do that effectively, and you should really make sure to take advantage of it.
So what you're telling me is that I just got to jam Jeff Driscoll?
I think you have to have some, but I won't have much. I really won't.
All right. So – That's quarterback. In terms of my exposure, it's going to be Dak Allen, Mitch, Breeze, Driscoll, Ryan. I'm not really interested in playing Matt Ryan at all. I like,
especially if this Julio thing.
Are we talking about like, oh, I'm going to be rocking Christian Blake and Matt Ryan stacks? Like, yeah. Especially because Ryan's going to carry, like, as you were talking about, not only will he carry ownership, but there's some threat of people behind swapping to him,
yeah,
and him getting more popular. I would honestly rather play Driscoll and Mitch.
Yeah, I definitely feel that way about Mitch. I don't know about Driscoll yet. I need to think through that a little bit more. But let's move to running back, where Alvin Kamara is going to be the top projected running back. Him and Ezekiel Elliott are going to be in pretty much a different tier than everybody else, right? So the way that this slate kind of shapes up from a cash game perspective, if you're playing cash games, is generally you can probably fit two of the three in of Alvin Kamara, Ezekiel Elliott, and Michael Thomas, right? And depending on the site, you might have choices. FanDuel, Michael Thomas is really, really expensive relative to the two running backs. And because FanDuel is a little bit more of a touchdown-dependent site, you're going to see a lot more of the optimals choose Alvin Kamara and Ezekiel Elliott over Michael Thomas because he's $1,000 more expensive. On DraftKings, even though he's a little bit more expensive, the barrier is cut. In part because he's very likely to get the bonus and he generates so many receptions week in and week out. So I think it's more of a discussion on DraftKings than it is on FanDuel. But I think, you know, we have Kamara as the better play than Zeke. Kamara just has a really stable pass game role. He's basically been getting double-digit targets since he's kind of come back. Atlanta's been a team historically that has funneled targets kind of over the middle of the field and in those short intermediate routes, and they don't give up as many big plays historically. So it's been very good to attack them with running backs in the Dan Quinn era. And so I think Kamara, you know, is the guy that you would emphasize, but I think you're going to play a lot of Zeke too, simply because the rest of the running backs on this slate all have question marks in terms of efficiency or workload or just offensive team viability. So I think you're going to end up playing a lot of Kamara and a lot of Zeke on the slate.
So what if I think that Zeke is okay, from a game theory perspective, what if I said the way I'm going to approach this slate is to just unleash Alvin Kamara, not lock him or anything, but basically play him on zero shuffle, zero volatility, but just rotate Bo Scarborough, Devin Singletary, Tarik Cohen, David Montgomery, like just rotate all of these other running backs. Like, do you think that I kind of think that that makes more sense because Zeke's range of outcomes has been wider this year, but in the wrong direction. He's been adding more and more floor games to his range of outcomes without providing like the slate breaking game.
So I think that's certainly viable. It'll keep you feeling alive the whole day. Because you'll have like 100% of your lineups with Kamara going late. I think ultimately what this comes down to is what is the gap in projected ownership between Kamara and Zeke? If the gap in projected ownership between the two is narrow,
I don't think it's wide. I think Zeke is going to be jammed because no other running back projects that well.
Wouldn't surprise me for a number of reasons. One, Zeke is cheaper than Kamara. Two, Zeke is a higher kind of brand name than Kamara, yep. I think, for like casual viewers as well. And three, casual viewers who are watching Thanksgiving Day football probably watched the Dallas-New England game last week. And what
for
did they
sure.
see from Dallas?
Yep.
They saw Dallas just kind of try to run and run.
They
and
saw
run
him establish run. It.
And that's what they remember, right, from Dallas the last few years if they haven't been watching Dallas all season long. So I do think if the ownership is relatively tight, I think that makes sense. I will say this, you know, teams have been able to run effectively on Buffalo throughout the course of the season. So that is the one thing that, you know, I'm really interested to see where Dak ownership comes in and where Zeke ownership comes in because, you know, I think both can certainly be successful, but just because Zeke is being used less frequently in the passing game this year, it's been the case most games that they are not successful together. On a three-game slate, the barrier for that is so low that I wouldn't concern myself with it. But I do think it in terms of if you're making decisions on like a mass multi-entry exposure level, I do think it's important. These other running backs, like we have to see the Atlanta situation. We have to see Devonta Freeman apparently practiced on Tuesday. Some reports that it's in full, some that was limited. We'll see what ends up on the injury report for him. Obviously, if he's back, it removes Brian Hill and Quadri Allison from consideration at all to the extent that they are in consideration. I don't think it makes a huge difference. I think Freeman would be a slightly better play than Brian Hill is, but have some of the same risks in terms of work share, in terms of efficiency. First week back, I would expect them to kind of ease him in a little bit and just not give him the full workload. So I think Brian Hill would then slide down to the Allison type role. But these other secondary backs, David Montgomery, Tarik Cohen, Bo Scarborough, who of these backs, if any, are you excited about playing on the slate?
You know who I'm going to say I'm excited about?
Freaking Bo Scarborough, isn't it?
Bo Scarborough, man. Bo Scarborough in a low total, gross game. You know who Bo Scarborough is, right? Like, you know who his 90th percentile projection is?
Derrick Henry.
LeGarrette freaking Blount, man.
Okay. I thought you were going to go Derrick Henry because I thought we were going to do the whole Alabama big dude running
back. No, Derrick Henry is able to catch two passes a game. I don't know if Bo Scarborough is ever going to get there. But if you remember last year's Thanksgiving slate, everyone was dead by noon because LeGarrette Blount had three touchdowns and I think like 90 yards rushing and no one played him. Like, he was like 8% owned. Well, Bo is going to be a little bit more owned than that, but he's playing about 50% of the snaps for Detroit, and the team can't decide between McKissick or Johnson behind him. McKissick played more 2 weeks ago. Johnson played more last week, but Scarborough's role has stayed the same. I think he projects pretty comfortably here for about 60% of the total backfield work. And I don't know, like, sometimes you just get that feeling, Drew. And the math says that Scarborough is he is not a mega value in our stuff, but he
has the third most projected carries.
Right. And
second most projected carries, ahead of David Montgomery in projected workload. So like he's going to
get the ball. It's just a matter of finding some efficiency.
Yeah. It's a matter of finding efficiency and particularly finding touchdowns. The thing that I think will be interesting on Scarborough ownership is that I do think, especially on DraftKings, that the Bears defense is going to be the heaviest owned defense by a wide margin.
People are especially, so there's like a very real outcome here where Jeff Driscoll is like a game time decision, right? And people are just, I mean, people are fading the Lions left and right if we are getting reports of like Driscoll's going to gut through it because they don't want to start David Blau. And you know what you do when your quarterback is, your running quarterback is hurt? You just hand the ball off. You just try and establish it the best you can.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's fine. I obviously like him more on FanDuel than I do on DraftKings simply because the scoring style just does not suit him on DraftKings at all. Like, even if he does score, if he doesn't hit the bonus on DraftKings, he's a dog to be in the winning lineup, even with one touchdown, I think. Because
okay, but is he a dog to be in the winning lineup with three touchdowns? Because that's what I'm guaranteeing.
Obviously, a heavy favorite to be in the winning lineup with three Bo Scarborough.
I can see a scenario where he legit scores.
Uncheck the Bears defense and print money on DraftKings.
I can actually see a scenario where he scores two touchdowns and ends with less than 20 DraftKings points. Like that is an in-play thing for him.
Oh yeah, definitely in play. I mean, he could have two touchdowns and less than 15 DraftKings points.
It would really be something. I don't know. Like that's
the old school Jerome Bettis line where he had like four carries, -1 yard, and five touchdowns or whatever it was.
So I think that there is some value in these slates where, I mean, Daily Roto stuff is free this week. Like these projections and tools are going to be very widely used. I think there is value in looking at the projections and saying where is somewhere, not that this is wrong, but where the results of this could be wrong. And I think Scarborough is one of them where I can easily see him outproducing our base points.
So, I mean, so the thing you have to think about is like, so our projections and our optimizer, everything's customizable there. So, you know, if you want to play around with what different game scripts look like entirely for teams, you can certainly do that. And if you wanted to play around with a game script where Detroit plays from ahead, runs the ball a ton, you, as you move kind of those team level baselines, you'll see Bo Scarborough's projection kind of move up alongside it. So I think there are definitely situations that you can kind of customize in the optimizer to examine and see how it would impact players' ranges of outcomes. I always think that's an interesting way to look through these smallish game slates where the slate is very dependent on kind of getting the game scripts right. In terms of other running backs of the cheaper ones, you know, David Montgomery and Tariq Cohen, I think are a little bit more.
Our stuff could be light on Montgomery, given that I was one of the people that helped set the baseline for it. So there is a chance that he has more work coming his way than our stuff is projecting at this very moment in time.
So I think those guys are the more cash game oriented, cheaper running backs simply because they have shown an ability to have a role in the passing game. Obviously, Tariq Cohen's entire role is in the passing game. I think Cohen is interesting given the injury issues. Like, we definitely saw the Bears willing to play Tariq Cohen in the slot earlier in the year when they had Mike Davis as well. They seem less likely to do that now with their running back depth a little bit less, and they seem a little bit more comfortable.
They're just setting up Ryan Nall season.
I hope not, but and the injury to Taylor Gabriel does open up kind of a wide receiver spot. So
and Trey Burton, and what happened to Adam Shaheen?
Just been hurt the whole time. I think he was drafted ahead of George Kittle.
I think he was. George Kittle was a fifth round draft pick, and Shaheen was a third round draft pick.
Can we talk about that?
Like, yeah.
Good God. Yeah, so the Bears are they're down Trey Burton, they're down Adam Shaheen, they're down Ben Broniker. their tight ends are dudes that only you would know, Davis. Like of the Daily Roto guys, most of us are more math oriented guys. You're a little bit more of a, you know,
it's really an art. It's more of an art.
You just know the most random people, and so like I will just shoot you a message and be like, there's something called a Jesper Horsted getting snaps for the Bears. Can you please make sure we add him so we pull a baseline projection from him? And you'll be like, oh, it's just for former wide receiver, converted wide receiver.
I literally own him in a dynasty league. Like, he's insane. Like on one of my teams.
Incredible. Well, this might be his moment.
Dude, I really mean this. Like, there's like these moments in DFS where there's very small edges to be had, but sometimes bigger ones arrive and you got to take your shot. Like, I'm going to be whatever our baseline is, I'm boosting Jesper like 100 in the opto.
Yeah. Just so you know, the boost is a percent. So if you boost a player with a projection of 1 point, 100, that
it gives
will get
him
them
two.
To 2 points.
Yeah, so you got it. So if you want to cheat the optimizer, what you have to do, and not that I ever cheat the optimizer on every single slate ever or anything, but what you got to do is you just got to increase their projections. You just increase their market share or their yards per target.
And what Davis doesn't realize he's also doing is then increasing the quarterback yardage alongside. But I do agree that there are unique opportunities in the DFS market that when you see them, you should try to be aggressive in them. Like when you see a couple of clowns touting Patrick Laird all week,
you got to get on Kalen Ballage, right?
You have to fade and get the giant leverage of the 1.6% owned Patrick Laird, and you got to go against that grain.
Did Ballage score more fantasy points than Patrick Laird? I legit don't think he did.
I think they each got a couple. Literally
Laird beat James White.
It was bad.
Who right, I played right, in
so,
cash.
So all right, other running backs. Other running backs on this slate, I think.
Well, you
talked about Scarborough. The guy I want to talk about is, I think, the biggest leverage play on the slate. The balls out leverage play on the slate.
It's Pollard.
No, it's Latavius Murray.
Oh yeah. Oh, I mean, that's like elementary leverage though. Like that's leverage enough that I think.
That way. He's not. I think he. That way.
I mean, yeah, he'll probably be like 8% owned, but he's such an elementary level play that like even my dad knows he's a leverage play. I think.
Come on.
Like I think my dad opens up this slate and goes, oh well, like, I could play Murray instead of Kamara and get leverage.
All right, there we go.
I bet sub Slack as we're recording this, I bet they're already talking about Murray as a leverage play.
All right, there you go. I'm just
no. He won't even plays. Be. He won't even be 10%, and Kamara will be the highest owned player of the slate. So what you got to do is you just got to boost. You just got to boost Latavius Murray big time. And
Lat's not going to get like Lat's projection isn't going to be great because he's only had like 7, 12, and 7 touches since Kamara's returned, and he's got like no passing game work. So the projection's certainly not going to be there. But again,
yeah, but he could beat Bo Scarborough though.
What happens if? Well, the thing about beating Bo Scarborough is that the reason he's more valuable than Bo Scarborough as a leverage play is because if both Bo Scarborough and Latavius Murray hit,
yeah, because he donks Alvin's projection
exactly,
and it's in more, and yeah, it's or
and Michael Thomas and Drew Brees, like the people that when Latavius hits, the people that he drags down with him when he's hitting are the people that are going to be the most owned plays on the slate: Cook, Thomas, Kamara. A breeze to some extent.
How mega mind would you have to be to play Latavius Murray and Alvin Kamara in the same lineup? Is that a level of mega mind that you can get to?
I mean, I think it's possible to do. You're just kind of you're in that situation. You're really hoping that, you know, New Orleans scores 4 rushing touchdowns and there's like 1 other rushing touchdown on the entire slate, which is totally possible.
Would you max one?
I would not.
Lat and Drew Brees.
Yes.
You just look like the kombucha girl.
Yes. I forgot that we record with video. Yes, I would. I would max one of Latavius and Drew Brees.
What about max one Latavius Murray, Michael Thomas?
No. I would not.
Yeah, I don't think I would either, because Thomas is so much better than everyone else.
I would not. Both Thomas and Kamara and maybe not Cook, but both Thomas and Kamara can get there on receptions alone. Brees cannot get there on yardage alone. He needs the touchdowns.
Yeah.
I think that can only get there via touchdowns. But do you think you're going to play some Pollard?
Yeah, because I think Pollard is, if we're talking about Zeke and Kamara even being close in ownership, I think that Pollard offers a similar leverage. Like, we've now seen him 2 weeks in a row. Zeke got a lot of touches last week, but 2 weeks in a row, we've seen Pollard used more as a real player in the offense and less as like a stone gimmick.
So Tony Pollard
or Tony Pollard Pollard ends up and he ends up in the blowout lineup like he did against Miami and against New York.
Right. So the blowout is the thing that I think is most compelling. But Tony Pollard on the season has averaged an 18% snap rate in the last 2 weeks, has been at 17.6 and 18.8.
If you thought Ezekiel Elliott mattered to Tony Pollard, you never understood Tony Pollard to begin with.
So I think Pollard has some of the same characteristics on leverage as Latavius Murray. I just think
much just with less so. less of a role in the close game
and less leverage. Like I think the Saints skill players will all be higher owned than the Cowboys skill players, and so that's why I like Latavius more.
But Pollard will be less owned than Murray. I mean, I would be shocked to see Pollard above 5% in anything.
I agree with that. I don't think it'll be enough of an ownership gap between those two that it would make enough of a difference for me.
What if Zeke has to take a nap due to all the turkey that he ate because he's fat?
Like Zeke gets caught on his beach towel that he's running with, and he busts his Achilles. And there's paths. I don't mind a sprinkle of Tony Pollard.
For example, I would rather play Tony Pollard than JD McKissick, who our projections have reversed.
Yeah, well, that's one where like McKissick, he's going to catch like two passes, and Pollard is not necessarily. I think we have him projected like exactly the same, but Pollard,
they're like literally the exact same points. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's enough, Tony Pollard. The last guy I'll talk about is Devin Singletary, who I think what we have seen from Singletary this year is when the Bills play from behind, he's on the field a lot more in general.
Right.
Bills haven't played from behind a ton. That should be the case this week. He's got a big market share of target upside because it's very difficult to pin where, like in the games that they've played from behind, we've seen his market share of targets spike. But the games that they play from ahead, they just don't throw a lot. And they generally have Frank Gore on the field, so his market share comes down. And so, like, he's a guy that, to me, is, like, he's to me, the first level contrarian, like, pivot. Like
he's Is he contrarian?
Yeah, I don't think, like, compared to...
Yeah, he'll be owned less than Cohen and Montgomery, yeah, so exactly. I guess, yeah. Okay, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, like, I will probably play zero David Montgomery across, like, 400 teams. So I will have a lot of Singletary.
Forever and always.
Do you know how bad David Montgomery is?
I'm a Bears fan. I know quite well.
I locked him in 150 within the last month, and yeah, it was so, the I mean, worst. It was the worst decision
way,
I've ever
no
made.
No better way to end your Thanksgiving than doing the reverse, unchecking him, and watching David Montgomery score the first touchdown of Thanksgiving slate.
It's the only way to get even, Drew. Drew, it's the only way to get even.
All right, let's move it to wide receiver, where Michael Thomas is the highest projected wide receiver, of course,
by 6 points.
Yeah, so.
6.5 points.
Like I said, in cash games, you're deciding between two of the three of him, Zeke, and Kamara. I think any of those combinations is great. I think you're more likely to find the Michael Thomas combinations on DraftKings than you are on FanDuel just because of pricing and scoring differences. In terms of tournaments, he's like the toughest guy for me. Him and Christian McCaffrey, although McCaffrey's been getting priced up to a level on his slates that it hasn't been as hard. But these guys on these smaller slates or like Showdown or whatever, they're the toughest fades because their floor is so good that even if like they aren't good, they're still playable. There's not like a situation where they're.
Yeah. Has Michael Thomas gotten less than 20 all year?
I think he's like 16 or above every game. So
pretty
like,
good.
Yeah. So if he gets you like 16, he could still be in the winning lineup if wide receiver as a whole kind of tanks. And he's still got a ton of min cash equity. So his ownership's going to be through the roof. I will probably have more Kamara and more Zeke relative to Thomas because of the ownership is my guess. But he's a great play. And play him wherever you want him. Like, honestly, like I don't know what else to say. What do you do with Amari and Julio, who both have seen like kind of middling target shares over the last month or so? And now Julio's got the shoulder issue. I don't know where the ownership's going to come in on these two guys.
Dude, if I'm forced to eat an Amari Cooper 40 burger on Thanksgiving and I don't have them, I would just retire from NFL Daily Fantasy Sports. There is not a chance that I'm not overweight on Amari because he is going to be so far away from a public play, like literally 0 points in his game log. And
I think that's like true on FanDuel. I don't know if that's true on DraftKings. He's 6K on DraftKings.
People will play like John Brown.
I don't think like our projections like John Brown over him, and I understand why, and it's terrifying. But I don't think people will naturally click John Brown over Amari Cooper.
I mean,
like I think Amari Cooper will be higher owned than John Brown. I don't think that's the case on FanDuel. FanDuel, he's like priced like Julio. He's priced like around 8K. Like, I don't think he's going to be very owned on FanDuel, or comparatively so. But I think on DraftKings at 6K, I think people are going to play him.
The thing is I got to get like 35% Amari Cooper.
I think that's fine. I mean, I think that'll probably be a little overweight. I don't think it'll be like,
that's only a little overweight. That's such a disaster. That
I mean, it's a 3-game slate, Davis. Like there's only so much ownership to go around.
There is only so much ownership to go around, but like, don't you think that, well, Julio being questionable does really throw a wrench in all right. this. If Julio was fine, he is so, so much more owned.
If he was fine, maybe, but he also just disappointed in a higher ownership spot.
People will forgive that. People will always forgive Julio. That's how
the internet has treated Julio in his career. There haven't been like, you know, 6-week spurts where people are losing their minds that he doesn't score touchdowns.
But I think he's like always owned.
Calvin Ridley is better than him.
Calvin Ridley going to deliver this victory to our NFC Silver Bullet team, and you're just going to have to apologize to us.
I'm so tilted about everything along with seasonal fantasy football this year. All right, so I think, you know, Michael Thomas clear cash game target, Amari and Julio better tournament targets. I think
those guys are not going to be owned in cash.
I think Amari might be on DK, but regardless, I think certainly in the conversation, Amari, and just so everybody knows, we had a back and forth, Leonie and I, about Amari and Michael Gallup. We're now projecting Michael Gallup for a higher target share than Amari, which Leonie did not agree with. And I was like, listen, man, I've been doing this for 11 weeks, setting target shares here. And, you know, after 11 weeks of seeing Gallup consistently have higher target shares than Amari Cooper, I just finally gave up. And I was like, I finally just put it to like where it's been. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but it is what it is. Like every 4-week increment during the season, Michael Gallup has out-targeted Amari Cooper when he's been healthy. Weeks 1 through 4, weeks 5 through 8, weeks 9 through 12, weeks 1 through 8, weeks 1 through 12, weeks 1 through 4. Like every single period I looked at, Gallup has out-targeted Cooper, and I don't know what to do with it. We still have Cooper projecting higher because he's more efficient. He has a higher percentage of touchdown equity. But that's what's keeping Amari Cooper kind of buried a little bit in our projections. I think we might be lower than the field on Amari, which is also kind of shaping your opinion of his ownership. But I think any of those Cowboys guys are viable cash game options, including Randall Cobb, who's seen his target share jump in recent weeks.
You would have laughed at me so hard saying that a month ago.
What? That Randall Cobb is viable?
Yeah. Randall Cobb is like a guy that I've been touting for six months.
To your credit, because I've been really harsh on you in the last week and a half with all this Patrick Laird nonsense. To your credit, you were very good on Randall Cobb, DJ Shark, late in drafts in best ball season. I was drafting running backs then, so I did not capitalize on it, and I regret that.
R.I.P. Mike Davis. All we need is Christian McCaffrey to get hurt, and then it's Mike Davis season all over again. Dude,
all we need. My best ball seasons are done. They're over. Like they stop at the playoffs. Did you like when you don't get into the playoffs, they just stop.
I'm sending my condolences.
So Mike Davis, Darwin Thompson, Malcolm Brown. Thank you for your contributions this year.
Here are some cheap guys, and I just want you to tell me if you think that they have more room to be good than our projections suggest right now. Isaiah McKenzie, 3,100.
Yes, because I took his projection down even further because Leonie said he thought Duke Williams would be active, and Leonie's like nailed every Bills thing I've asked him this year. So McKenzie's been playing a lot more, and his target share of late has been better. Nobody is going to play that dude. Nobody. And they do run some like pitch play, like handoff type stuff for him, some niche gadget stuff as well. So he's going to touch the ball a few times.
Dude, the gadget floor. This is a long-standing thing from the Gilcast. The gadget floor. You got to think about that when you're making your plays.
So yeah, I think he's viable. The one cheap guy we should like really note is like the guys who our projections are going to love are Anthony Miller.
Miller is a lock. I think
Taylor Gabriel's out. Ben Broniker's out. Miller's target share has been on the rise. He was sequestered early in the season.
He is the Chicago Bears tight end right now. The In the Bears offense, there's a position called the U position, and that's what Travis Kelce played, and that's what Trey Burton played when he was healthy. It's more of a receiving position than a blocking position. Miller is just playing that position now.
And we are all about the U. So Anthony Miller is a great value. John Brown's also a really good value. John Brown has really separated from Cole Beasley in recent weeks in terms of target share.
Beasley smashed last week, and we weren't on him, Drew.
I had some Beasley last week. It didn't elevate me anywhere. I mean, when Beasley smashes and it's like 19 points, it's like, oh man, what am I doing playing Beasley in GPPs? But he's certainly viable. I think John Brown's the better play of the two once again. And then, Allen Robinson, Calvin Ridley, those Michael Gallup, I think those guys are more like tournament type options. But who are the other cheap guys you want to throw at me? You want to talk some Javon Wims?
Yeah, I think that Javon Wims, I think Ted Ginn, Danny Amendola, yeah. Russell Gage, I think all of those guys are playable and will be in Christian my MME mix. So this is actually a good point. I do not think other projection systems are going to have this. I think that if Julio is declared out, other projection systems are going to put Justin Hardy in as the guy. Justin Hardy, though, is slot only. Yeah. And Russell Blake, Gage will Blake play that position.
Blake was the guy last week. He was the guy.
So
last
Blake
week
will Blake will play targets. Over Justin Hardy on the outside. And I think that, I guess I haven't looked, but my assumption would be that because Hardy is the guy who's played in the past, that he is going to get those reps. But it should be Blake.
So and Blake is one of these guys that you can use as a late pivot based on the news, but nobody's going to have until we get if Julio is questionable, nobody's going to have Blake projecting decently at all. So
or if you just have dead teams, you swap to him over Gage.
Exactly. So I think those guys are all in the mix. I would say the guys that intrigue me the most of that group would be Ted Ginn. Again, a lot of leverage on those other Saints plays. Like if you get Ted Ginn, Traquan's just not getting enough looks, but Ted Ginn is getting one deep ball game. Like guaranteed. If he happens to hit it, it opens up the slate for you. So I think Ginn is the guy that I like the most. And then I think Wims is going to be on the field a ton. So I think those two guys I like a little bit more than Isaiah McKenzie, but I do see the pass to McKenzie just because of the way they've been utilizing him.
Yeah, I think I'm on board with all of that. That all seems about right to me.
All right, tight end. What are we going to talk about here beyond Jared Cook?
Well, we got to talk about how heavy do you go on Jared Cook? Do you just let him go? Here's the thing. If you were someone like, if I was TJ, I would exclude Jared Cook from GPPs. I just wouldn't play him.
I think he's going to be that owned.
I think that he will be north of 60% in MME.
I don't think he'll be that owned on DraftKings.
There is not another playable tight end, man.
But there's opportunity cost associated with it because he's more he's 2K more expensive than all the other tight ends. There, that does playing him prevents you from playing like Kamara, Zeke, Michael Thomas. So I don't.
Here's the thing. So many people just put their cash lineup in single entry, in 3 max, in 20 max tournaments, and everyone's playing Cook in cash.
Yeah, I think. Well, I don't know. Probably. But I don't think he's going to be that owned. I probably won't have a strong position on Jared Cook. If I have any position, it will be underweight, but I don't think I'll have a strong one. And then I think I will be spreading my exposure at tight end quite a bit because I really do think if you find the tight end that catches the touchdown, you win the position.
Yeah. Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, if I was someone of unlimited means and I just wanted to acquire more means, I just would not play Jared Cook at all.
Well, Jared Cook could be the guy who catches the touchdown. I still think
you would not take Jared Cook versus the field in touchdowns, though. Dear Drew Dinkmeyer, come on, man. Jared Cook has been having a horrible season until the last 3 weeks.
Okay, I would not. You're right. I would not. Our projections would make that look very foolish. I would not. He's a fine underweight or a fine fade, especially because it gets you more guaranteed volume with the spends that you're doing. I don't think he'll be as highly owned as you think. In terms of the other guys, I already know who you're going to say you like. You're going to talk about Blake Jarwin, aren't you?
Not even. No? I mean, yes. I mean, he's going to be in my mix, of course. I'm not a fish. Dawson Knox is the guy I'm second most interested in, though.
All right,
after
so you're just running out all the Allen Knox stacks with Tony Pollard brought back. Is
oh, dude, just like give. Come on, man. I'm buying a new car Thursday night. off my Dawson Knox money.
It might be a micro.
Oh, actually, tight end is actually dope because Jaden Graham is like a real receiving tight end, and Luke Stocker was banged up too.
Yeah.
So, Jay, we're looking at like an 80% snap share Jaden Graham game coming up.
Yeah. I think those guys are certainly in the mix.
I might just exclude Jared Cook because I like these other plays.
Oh, you want to give your Jesper Horsted take?
Oh, dude, people don't even know about Jesper Horsted, the all-time leading receiver in Princeton University history.
This guy's an Ivy Leaguer?
Not only was he an Ivy Leaguer, Drew, he was a wide receiver in college, and he was also the leadoff hitter for their Ivy League championship baseball team.
Wow.
He's the only receiver.
I mean, I feel like I probably have to play a little bit of this guy.
Yeah. Now. He's the only receiver in Princeton history to score more than 10 touchdowns in a season, and he scored like 20.
Wow.
He's a baller. Yeah.
While we're talking Ivy League football, shout out to my friend Jay Bernard, who holds all the Dartmouth receiving records and did it all without ever getting a single yard after the catch.
Just fell down immediately. Well, this Jesper guy seems like he's similar. He ran a 4.8 4.40.
Yeah. I mean, 4.8 would have been Jay Bernard's fastest day ever, but that's for another day. All right. So this Witten Jarwin situation, because you know we let you into the projections for a little bit, and all of a sudden Jason Witten's target share started diminishing very quickly, and I moved it down
2%, and you guys are acting like I've committed like a Kuwaitian war crime.
Yeah, 2 percentage points on a guy who has like a 14% market share of targets is actually like a 15-20% drop in projection. So defend yourself. Is this simply against all old people on short weeks? Is that what this is about?
Well, here is the logic. The team is searching for answers a little bit because they lost against the New England Patriots and they lost against the Vikings. And Jason Witten had his two most unproductive games of the season against the Vikings and against the Lions. It's also a little bit later in the season. Jason Witten at this point was retired from football. Blake Jarwin is a little bit younger. Blake Jarwin is a little bit fresher. And Blake Jarwin's snaps and targets have trended up over the last 2 weeks. So, yeah, I swapped 2% of the projections, 2% of the target share from Witten to Jarwin.
All right, so Jason Witten on the season, 14.5% market share of targets. Over the last four games, Jason Witten, you know, season's getting longer. He's older.
It's going to be the exact same because that's how math works.
16% actually increased target percentage over the last four games for Jason Witten. You have dropped him down to 10%. Which you know what that means? That means I will be revising these projections afterwards. I would probably prefer to play Jarwin over Witten too, personally, but I think the math is going to say that Witten is the better play. In all honesty, what I will be doing is generally just having kind of a shotgun approach on these guys. I think the guys who have the best chance at realizing their upside are Dawson Knox and Jaden Graham. But I think I will have like a little bit of each of these guys and trying to differentiate a little bit more at other positions.
Yeah. I mean, that's the smart thing to do. I should be clear though, like Jason Witten did just play his season high number of snaps this last week. So like, I think it's a legitimate play at tight end. And we know like Jarwin is the ceiling play, right? Jarwin won someone $1 million last year.
That's the reason that I think – remember that? What, Jarwin had like four touchdowns?
He had three touchdowns and like I'll pull the game up right
good
here.
Good Lord,
exactly.
that was something.
So in week 16 last year, he had week 17, he had 8 targets, 7 receptions, 119 yards, and 3 touchdowns in that game against the Giants. That was meaningless for them that they won anyways because the Giants are destined to just be the Cowboys' punching bag.
Yeah, that was something. All right, defenses and special teams. The top defense on the slate is the Chicago Bears. They face Detroit, who has the lowest implied total against. They face a quarterback in Jeff Driskel. It takes a lot of sacks. The Bears defense is one that can generate pressure. They're the third cheapest defense on DraftKings. There's a lot of expensive skill players on this slate. They are going to be monstrously owned. Monstrously owned. Like, I think they're going to be... I would not surprise me if they're greater than 50% owned.
Playing a defense that's 50% owned in terms of, like, math, that's got to be, like, the so dunciest things ever.
It's so bad. It's so bad. And when you consider that the other defenses that are cheap are ones that you're all going to take skill position players from against, right? Like, you're not playing Atlanta in Buffalo's defense, although Atlanta, I guess, just did shut down New Orleans a few weeks ago. But you're generally not going to play those defenses. So here's the thing. I think you can still play a decent bit of Bears defense, but I don't think you want to be overweight the field on this situation. I think the line.
What do you do with defense versus offense on these short slates?
Oh yeah, we need to talk about that. Leonie reminded us too. Thank you for bringing that up. In the optimizer, our DVO defense versus offense is set to zero. What you want to do on these short slates is, for me, I will usually make it like two. And then what I will do is because it doesn't take too long because it's only six teams, I will create rules that make sure that the type of player that is going against the defense, like, I don't want the Falcons defense against Latavius Murray.
Right.
I don't want the Bears defense against Bo Scarborough. So I will group out those situations where I will still allow pass catchers essentially against my defense, but I won't allow the guys who are very touchdown dependent. And oftentimes that will involve quarterbacks as well. So like, if I'm going to play the Lions defense, I'm not going to have David Montgomery or Mitch Trubisky on those types of teams, but I'll allow Tariq Cohen. I'll allow Anthony Miller and Allen Robinson. So that's the way that I will go about that. I will probably have the setting net two, and then we'll create rules and groups to make sure that the type of player that I'm getting against it, or I'm allowing for against those defenses, is not the one that would very strongly negatively correlate, which is those guys who are going to get rushing volume and touchdowns.
Well, there you go.
So the Lions defense, I think, is the best pivot from the Bears in terms of salary, in terms of, like, upside.
Well, the Saints is the defense to try and get overweight on, right?
Yes. Yeah. I think Saints plus Latavius Murray is a very interesting and Saints have the same type of leverage that Latavius Murray has, in the sense that if they score defensive touchdowns, that limits offensive possessions. If they just shut out Atlanta entirely, that limits the offensive aggressiveness of New Orleans. So I do think the Saints are going to offer a lot of leverage on the slate defensively. Outside of that, you know, I think Dallas's defense is certainly interesting because Josh Allen takes a lot of sacks and turns the ball over, and Dallas has a pretty good pass rush. But I think they will be second highest owned after the Bears, I think. I think you should have a sprinkle of Falcons D, like, if you're MMEing a Falcons
D. Yeah, that should be obvious. Like, we saw the Saints get dominated by these Falcons at home 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Like, that's just how range of outcomes go. This stuff happens, and it doesn't have to have a reason. It just happens.
Yeah, and I think the Cowboys and Saints Ds will be much more popular on FanDuel than they will on DraftKings, because they're priced a little bit better on FanDuel compared to the Bears. The Bears are priced as the most expensive defense on FanDuel. They're just not on DraftKings. All right, so before we wrap this up, let's walk through, like, some of the injury situations that we are monitoring for this slate. So on Chicago side, we talked about Taylor Gabriel and Ben Broniker are not expected to play there in concussion protocol. So that's going to certainly tighten things up on the receiving side for Chicago. On Detroit side, we're watching Jeff Driskel. I don't think there's any other injury situations there that I've missed.
This Driskel thing sounds like it's, like, real.
Yeah.
He didn't take any practice reps on Tuesday. So they're going to play in 48 hours. He has not practiced.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good at all. And you said David Blau, is that the guy who's behind him for Detroit, the Purdue quarterback?
He's so bad. Yeah, the old Purdue guy. He's like a guy. Like, here's how bad it is. They tried to get Josh Johnson back, but his XFL team blocked them.
Wouldn't it be great if we just had, like, every year there was a thing where Josh Johnson just came back into the NFL, played great for, like, three games, and then we never saw him again.
And then he comes back,
like, week 14. Like, every year he's just got, like, the last 3 weeks of the season. They're like, hey, he's the guy that, like, covers the holiday shifts at work when you're like, hey, you right. know, we need to get that independent contractor to cover these shifts so our employees can get the day off. Like, that's Josh Johnson. He comes in for the holiday work, and then he just disappears. Yeah, so I think those are the big injury situations there. Buffalo, I don't think Robert Foster is going to play. The question for us will be whether Duke Williams is active or not, and if Duke Williams is treated as, like, the wide receiver three, or if Isaiah McKenzie's kind of left alone there. Dallas, I don't think has injury issues. Like, Amari's been on injury reports kind of all season long, but
they
like last week.
He for whatever reason, like, yeah, he's clearly hurt, but they're not limiting his minutes at all.
Yeah, it's so I don't know what's going on there, but I don't think there's anything on Dallas' side to be alarmed by yet. I don't think there's anything on New Orleans' side that we need to be alarmed by. And then Atlanta, it's really Julio, which I think is a really big deal, because obviously we know Atlanta's going to throw the ball a lot. And so those cheap guys, whether it's Gage or whether it's Christian Blake or Jaden Graham, there's going to be cheap reception volume available there. Whether the whole offense fails like it did last week, certainly in the range of outcomes. But when you're really cheap, there's not a lot of guys on the slate, and you can catch like 3 for 40, it can be viable. And so I think the Julio injury is going to be a big one for the slate.
And I am hoping we get a Schefter tweet the night before, but I'm not overly optimistic. Like, I'm hoping that we get Julio's tested it out. He's fine. He's good to go. But I don't know if that will happen for sure.
Yeah. So. But that's it. And I'll get one last reminder in before you take us on out, Davis. But if you are interested in checking out the content and the projections that go along with this podcast, with all of our NFL coverage this week, including the main slates, the showdown slates, our NBA coverage, you know, we've got a 14-game slate on Wednesday. We've got these huge NBA slates during the course of the week. Head on over to dailyroto.com. Use the Thanksgiving free trial promo stuffing, and you'll get a 7-day free trial that you can cancel at any time. And take us for a test ride over the course. This is only for, we should say this, this is only for new users. This is not for those of you out there that are subscribing to Daily Roto right now and want to cancel your billing and then sign up for the free trial and then re-sign up for your bill. That's not going to happen. We're not doing that. So this is just for new users. If you haven't tried us out before, you're welcome to this week. I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving.
There we go. Everyone, make sure dailyroto.com stuffing. And we will be back a little bit later this week with more content. And if your seasonal fantasy football teams are trying to get ready for the playoffs, that roster management podcast is up there as well. And we will be back, I think, on Friday.